This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy and Eric Swalwell. Eric Swalwell and Nancy Pelosi in the crosshairs of congressional Republicans after a story that we've been talking about for the last couple of days, the Axios story that details how apparently China's Mata Hari was able to gain the confidence of Eric Swalwell, get close to him and a couple of other politicians.
Yeah, her name is Fing Fang. Or Christine Fang, that's what she told the Americans.
She apparently did some fundraising for Eric Swalwell. She placed an intern in Eric Swalwell's office. And when questions concerning her began to be raised in about 2015, she vanished, ostensibly recalled back to China. But there are questions that both Swalwell and Nancy Pelosi need to answer, and they're being pressed to answer, as to exactly what the relationship was specifically. Was any classified information disclosed, as Swalwell's a member of the House Intelligence Committee? And exactly what is the timeline for Swalwell, per the defensive briefing he got from the FBI, apparently sometime around 2015, that apprised him of this.
I wonder
if that was at the same time that DiFi was getting a defensive briefing about her Chinese
driver.
National driver. I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, and he said, too, you know, I cooperated with the feds, and I had no idea that was his plausible deniability. You know, I did the right thing when I found out what was happening. But he got played, and that's the problem.
Well, Swalwell is being pressed by both House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and Senator Tom Cotton, who was on Fox yesterday, to be withdrawn or to resign his spot on the House Intelligence Committee.
Eric Swalwell and Nancy Pelosi do need to answer these questions. You know, I know that Eric Swalwell is hiding behind the cloak of classified information, Sandra. I'm on the Intelligence Committee. I've been around the block. I can tell you there is nothing classified about Eric Swalwell's fundraising practices or his social life. Until he comes forward and has a thorough and complete explanation for what happened, then he should not sit on the House Intelligence Committee and have access to classified information. And Nancy Pelosi needs to answer what she knew and when she knew it. If Eric Swalwell was briefed about this woman in 2015, surely Nancy Pelosi, the House leader, a member of the Gang of Eight, which has access to the most classified secrets of our nation's government, knew it as well. Because she kept him on the House Intelligence Committee for these last 5 years. They both have a lot of questions to answer, and they needed to do so in public today.
I think he's right about that. And here's one of the things that's troubling, and it's not surprising, but it doesn't mean it's any less troubling. So you were you got this defensive briefing in 2015, and she's disappeared back to China, presumably.
Relationship's over, Dan.
Why not disclose what occurred?
Why not happen to other lawmakers, maybe?
Well, also, so you don't have questions 5 years later per an Axios report of exactly what the nature of the relationship was, what the timeline was in terms of your appraisal and then the response that you took. And why not disclose this publicly to say, look, just so everybody knows, this happened.
Right.
And I'm still on the House Intelligence Committee, so I want to be proactive and transparent about it so that nobody thinks that there's any cover-up here of any wrongdoing and so on and so forth. Just come public with it if there's nothing to see here so that you're not asked, well, why didn't you disclose? And because you didn't disclose, is that problematic? This whole, I didn't do anything wrong, nobody's charging me with doing anything wrong. Right. That's the case right up until somebody is accusing you of doing something wrong, right until you do get charged with doing something wrong, to wit, see Hunter Biden. Well, Eric Swalwell was on CNN, of course, needed a friendly audience.
He would never have gone on Fox.
And, I mean, remember exactly the level of intellect you're dealing with. If you forgot his five-minute presidential campaign last year, we've got some of the lowlights. I mean, this guy is he's really ridiculous, even though he's a former prosecutor of some sort
in
California.
He's smarmy, and he's an attention-seeking Democrat.
He's also ridiculous. This is also somebody who talked about taking people's guns, using nuclear weapons if necessary, among other Eric Swalwell classes. He built up quite a library in just a few short months last year. But Swalwell on CNN, what do? And you'll hear from Nancy Pelosi as well, the misdirection play.
Did you have any concerns about this person before you had what's known as a defensive briefing from the FBI to make you aware of this threat?
No, Jim, I was shocked when, you know, just over 6 years ago, I was told about this individual. And then I offered to help, and I did help. And I was thanked by the FBI for my help, and that person is no longer in the country. And I was a little surprised to read about my cooperation in that story, because the story says that, you know, there was never a suspicion of wrongdoing on my part, and all I did was cooperate. And the FBI said that yesterday. But the wrongdoing here, Jim, is that at the same time this story was being leaked out is the time that I was working on impeachment on the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. And if this is a country where people who criticize the president are going to have law enforcement information weaponized against them, that's not a country that any of us want to live in. And I hope it is investigated as to who leaked this information.
This is the same guy who had no problem with Jim Comey leaking classified information to a media contact to advance the Russian collusion hoax, remember, just so we are clear on who Eric Swalwell is.
Don't you love how he plays the victim? Are you like,
well, it's right. It's the misdirection play. Yeah. You don't look over here because I haven't been accused of any wrongdoing. But of course, the CNN, fungible CNN anchor, didn't ask the pertinent question. The pertinent question being, why didn't you disclose what had transpired at the time in the interest of informing your constituency and the American people, given your position on the House Intelligence Committee, which is a sensitive one.
National security for our country. And again, to protect other lawmakers from doing this. Like, this is out there. This is possible. It could be a driver. It could be a woman who wants to be with you in a relationship.
Jim in Crown Point.
You know, it's amazing how when they question Democrats, they give them almost all of the answer. So all they have to say is yes or no. Dianne Feinstein's chauffeur was a spy, Chinese spy. The Indian family that had access to all the computers on Capitol Hill, all these people disappear and nothing's said about it.
Yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's guy, right. Forgot about him. Yeah, it's a good one.
And it's amazing how all this stuff is so blatant and it's so wrong, but nope. The mainstream media says nothing. Why are they even reporting news?
Well, it's novel when they do, and it's usually about 5 years late. So I guess this is as best as you can expect from some of these outlets. Now, Speaker Pelosi asked about it, too. You heard Tom Cotton say it's not just Swalwell here. Nancy Pelosi was presumably briefed on it, too. So why didn't she publicly disclose? Why didn't she take any corrective action? And here is her response. So you heard the misdirection play from Swalwell. He's aghast that somebody leaked classified information. Nancy Pelosi's got an alternative conspiracy theory.
In the spring of 2015, the leadership of the House and the committee were informed that overtures from a Chinese person were being made to members of Congress. When that was made known to the members of Congress, it was over. You know, that was the end of any communication with those people. So it isn't, I think we should make sure that everybody knows what they are being subjected to. But I don't know that it means that we have to black background checks for every intern who comes into the Capitol. I do think that it's unfortunate that Mr. McCarthy is trying to make an issue of this when his leadership, we all found out at the same time, the Republican leadership, and that several members had been approached.
Were you briefed on this?
We were all at the same moment, the House Republican and Democratic leaders and the leadership of the committee were briefed at the same moment. Make sure you know that, because he keeps going around saying, when did they know? We knew when they knew. And that, at that time, that was the end of it. But you know what he's trying to do? He's trying to deflect attention from the fact that he has QAnon in his his delegation over there. And that, I think, is a danger in terms of our debate here about, you know, what the possibilities are for undue influence.
She's through papers. She's adjusting her mask.
Trying to come up with the answer. So so two things. One is the real problem here is trying to deflect attention away is Minority Leader McCarthy from QAnon. This is a reference to a congresswoman just elected from Georgia named Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's been accused of subscribing to QAnon theories. Let me understand something. Speaker Pelosi, of course, this was not asked. The Chinese communist spy operations and QAnon conspiracy theories on Twitter are represent the same national security threat? Is that what I'm to understand? How silly. This is how silly these people are. And I'll tell you what, when you make such a desperate, offer such desperate conjecture as a way to misdirect from the issue at hand, that's suspicious, number one. Number two, as opposed to the House Republican leadership at the time being briefed and at the same time she was, well, let's name names. So who was there? Who was in the briefing? And if Republicans fail to bring this forward, then Republicans are at fault, too. You don't get to say we did something that was less than honorable, but there were also some Republicans who could have done something honorable, and they also chose to do something less than honorable, so that makes it okay. That doesn't exactly work, Speaker Pelosi. Also, follow-up that wasn't presented to her. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey, thanks, Dan, for taking a call. Listen, this is so sickening the way that when it was, like, for example, they had some suspicion about Donald Trump's son and everything like that with that Russian spy. So they set him up. They don't give him no defensive briefing. They don't do nothing. They just go after him, go after everybody around him and all stuff like that. But here with Swalwell, oh, yeah, defensive briefing. Yeah, my butt. They go over and they warn him, hey, we're on you. You better get her out of the country, hide the evidence, and let her escape the Dodge. This whole thing between Democrat and Republican, and for our national security, and for the justice and the right things to go on in our country, it's all rotten through and through and everything. Our country is gut shot with these people. These rotten people on the left and everything like that, they're destroying this place and everything like that. It's right in front of our faces and everything like that. Trump ought to basically hold on that White House and everything and tell those people and everything like that to knock it off.
All right, thanks for the call.
I mean, it's just
Craig.
The arrogance, too, that they think that they wouldn't get caught. You know, it's different rules for different people. I'm so sick of it.
Well, we don't
and
want...
And he needs to step down from his position.
From House Intel.
House Intel.
Well, I mean, we don't want to forget all of Eric Swalwell's good works, too. You know, he was a Russian collusion hunter, you'll remember.
Taxpayer dollars to ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election. And the complaint that I've heard from
I'm sorry, you said something, Representative?
Wait. Gassy, loosey-goosey, what's going on over there?
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. One of the features of living in a kleptocratic kakistocracy such as Illinois is that people die at the hands of their government. And it's usually those who are most exposed among us, those who are most vulnerable, those who have a reliance on the state. And so that would definitely include Illinois veterans. It was just... 5 years ago, between the years 2015 and 2017, when 13 Illinois veterans died after Legionnaires outbreaks in VA facilities, most notably in Quincy.
Yeah, and Pritzker, then the candidate, campaigned on that, saying, look what Bruce Rauner did. He stood in front of the Quincy home saying, when I become governor, I will make sure that our veterans are always treated with respect and that this will never happen again.
And Bruce Rauner's administration was culpable for what occurred with those Legionnaires outbreaks. He was criticized by me and others, and rightly so. It was a awful handling of the situation, which continues to be sort of just an awful management of Illinois' veterans affairs, including the living environments for Illinois veterans. And so now fast forward, and you've had 33 residents from the LaSalle Veterans Home die of COVID-19. And this is against the backdrop of something that we've known for many, many months now, right, in terms of where exposure is the most pronounced in sort of long-term care facilities where you have elderly individuals. This is something that apparently evades the understanding of governors like Pritzker and Cuomo and Whitmer and Murphy. But it's a fact, and so now Pritzker is trying to make up for what has already transpired.
Yeah, so yesterday we had Medal of Honor recipient Alan Lynch on the program talking about the horrific conditions at the VA in LaSalle. We're talking, you know, our politicians, Dan, keep saying, wash your hands, wash your hands. They didn't have soap to wash their hands with. They didn't have shampoo. They were on dirty sheets. They didn't have denture cream. They don't have razors, toothpaste, like the basic necessities to live. And people can't go in there to see their loved ones. So they're trapped. Those people are trapped. And not saying those people, but people who fought for our country. And JB kind of, you know, he said it was a rumor when there were rumblings of sending in the National Guard.
2 days ago, I was asked here about National Guard being deployed to our homes, and I dismissed it as a rumor. In retrospect, I had directed every member of my administration to move quickly to respond with every available resource to assist IDVA, and National Guard was asked to be of assistance before I was made aware. That's a good thing. I want my administration to be nimble and responsive, but I want to apologize for being dismissive when I was asked about it. I will say this is just one example of how we are directing every available resource to our veterans community through the period of this period of exceptional risk.
Dan, help me out here. How does he not know that the National Guard has been called in? He is in charge of the National Guard. He's our governor.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, it seems implausible that he didn't know. And if he didn't know, it's certainly not good news.
But now that he knows,
that means somebody else is at the wheel. Also, it's this week. I don't know if he mentioned it because I can only tolerate paying attention to him for so long. There was an administrator for the LaSalle Veterans Home where those 33 veterans died, Angela Melbreck. She was fired.
Right.
As of Thursday, 38 of 93 residents in that home in LaSalle County have tested positive for the virus, along with three staff members.
And there's other facilities, such as Quincy. Yes, the same VA home in Quincy where the Legionnaires outbreak was that has had some outbreaks, too.
We are also experiencing an outbreak at our Quincy Veterans Home, though it is currently primarily limited to one residential building within the home, and staff do not work among multiple buildings. DPH staff, as well as a federal DVA specialist, have been on site in recent days. The Quincy complex has six separate buildings home to residents, with anywhere from 2 to 5 units per building.
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
So 55 veterans at the Quincy home have tested positive for COVID as of Wednesday. Mm-hmm. A total of 125 residents and staff have recovered. Mantino home, 18 residents, 33 employees have tested positive since August. Two residents at the Mantino facility have died from COVID-19. So it's interesting, too, because there's so much focus on cases and spike in cases that generates evasive action. Well, here you have, a substantial percentage of the residential population, including the employees at these veterans' homes, and nobody seemed to be paying much attention until there was enough of a body count that they were forced to pay attention.
But even in the room yesterday, you had two reporters. I'm just saying, Eric Hong and Craig Wall from ABC7 and a reporter from, I think, Univision or Telemundo. Not one of them asked one follow-up question on this big news that the Illinois National Guard has been called into not one, not two, but three VA homes in our state. And then they took questions online. And Jordan, who runs interference for Pritzker, didn't ask my question. My question was this morning, we had Alan Lynch, Medal of Honor recipient, on the show. He told us the conditions at LaSalle are deplorable. No soap, shampoo, no dirty sheets, no cable isolation. Were you aware of the situation? She wouldn't ask that question. Because she's protecting him.
Well, so there's
and she gets paid on the side by him.
Okay, whatever. I mean, there's two issues. There's two substantive issues here. The one issue is what's going on with the management of Illinois' veterans' homes, generally speaking. But between the Legionnaires outbreak a few years ago to now this, and as you pointed out, the basics not being present. And then secondly, what specifically is it that current staffing in the Illinois Veterans Administration can't accommodate that the National Guard is being scrambled to provide? What is it the National Guard is specifically doing that state employees can't do?
They're supposedly helping out with testing and screening so that the employees at those homes can tend to the patients. And the director that Linda.
Well, why does the National Guard need to do it? Don't we have a Department of Public Health? I mean, I want to understand what the division of labor is here with all of these competing state agencies and all of these state workers. You know, I understand that they, in many cases, get to call their own shots in terms of when they're going to work or not work, and they get paid all the same. I get that they're super essential workers, of course. But it would be nice to understand exactly what the resources are and how they're being deployed. You don't get to sort of say, well, they're doing this. Well, what about this other cohort of employees? What are they doing? Well, they're also doing – it's not explained. This is bootstrapping. This is covering up malfeasance is what it sounds like to me. And it sounds like what Sergeant Lynch was saying as well.
Well, this is what they officially said. This additional help will allow the nurses to once again – focus on taking care of our veteran
residents. Yeah, I'm not interested in their propaganda. I'm interested in an actual substantive answer. I know what they're going to say.
Well, they're there to make sure the PPE is being worn properly because there was also complaints that the nurses didn't have it up over their nose and that they ran out of PPE.
I'm sorry. So the National Guard is being brought in to make sure that medical professionals put their personal protective equipment on right? I mean, it's absurd. Come on.
I know.
Tom and Oswego.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I tell you, this one really frosts my, you know what. Of all the people that we should be taking care of, it's the veterans. Now, obviously, the healthcare workers and the elderly people in nursing homes, but these are our veterans. And if we can't take care of these people, some of the most important people, as far as I'm concerned, why do we want the government to run our healthcare system? Are you kidding? Are people blind to this?
And also, Tom, something else, too. Thanks for the call. If governments, the politicians, won't keep their promises to veterans who, nobody argues that veterans should get what they're entitled to per their service to the country. It's not like there's an opposition to that. So it does say something, doesn't it? It's very much like the conversation we have with respect to state services for people with developmental disabilities. It's not like anybody's arguing that people with developmental disabilities need state services through no fault of their own, shouldn't get state services. There's no opposition to that. There's no opposition to promises made being kept to veterans, whether it's their health care or their residential care in these home settings. And so everybody agrees. And yet, here we are talking about yet another catastrophe in veterans' homes in Illinois. Everybody agrees on the developmental disabled side, to continue the analogy. And yet, Illinois is the worst in the nation in providing services to developmentally disabled. What does that tell you about the ruling class politicians in this state? They don't keep promises everybody agrees should be kept, including them. Why? Because they're not a priority. They're not a salient constituency. It's something to pay lip service to. You don't actually have to do anything because we have higher priorities for your money, and it's mostly feather bedding our people.
But this
really needs to be framed, because if they won't do this, it's not they can't, they won't do this. What is it exactly you expect them to do? They're going to make your life better, maybe if you're in on one of the scams. But in terms of generally speaking, this altruistic disposition of the political ruling class in the state, they're doing wonderful things or trying to do wonderful things to make life so much better for everyone. All you have to do is look at how veterans, and I would say again, another insignificant constituency in terms of political power, saliency, people with developmental disabilities, look how they're treated in Illinois. That's all you need to know about how barbaric Illinois is. Barbaric.
I know. I want somebody to get in, though, to help the people. They can't get in. Alan Lynch, I said, can you get in there? And he's like, we can't. And so, I mean, I just hope something. And even the Illinois director of the VA, Linda Chapalavia, she hasn't been to any of these.
Linda Chapalavia is a political hack.
I know. She
state
needs
rep.
To get fired. She needs to be replaced.
Who's going to fire her? I mean, she'll ultimately get fired if it gets close enough to Pritzker where some other head needs to roll. He needs another human shield, you know, like he uses his family as a human shield. He'll be happy to use Linda Chapalavia as a human shield when the time comes. It's just we're just not there yet.
But I listened to part of that Senate hearing at the VA, and she denied four times. I said, well, when did you ever let Pritzker know that there was an outbreak there? And she didn't. The bottom line is she didn't.
Well, these posts. Linda Chapalavia, these state reps that leave the legislature to go be an agency head.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I mean, you know what they're doing, right? This is reward for political fealty, number one. Number two, the reward is not the title, although that's nice and looks, you know, fancy on your LinkedIn profile. The point is, it's the pension. You're going to bump my salary from the meager 75 grand I was making as a part-time legislator. You know, now you put me in the 120, 150, 160, and that increases my pension on the backside. That's what the agency heads mainly that come from the legislature. I mean, there are exceptions, of course, but generally speaking, that's the play here. Linda Chapalavia. Are you kidding me? You think that she's going to be the vanguard for Illinois veterans? That's laughable. Except
she's
it's not
director.
Funny. But that's Illinois. But that's what I'm saying. This is what you get in a kleptocratic cacistocracy. It is all graft, and it is graft run by our lessers. This is what happens. There are consequences. Rob in Hampshire.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you?
Morning.
Hey, your comment about just the number of agencies and bureaus in the state of Illinois and the overlapping nature of all these public employees. And I've been running a small business for 30 years, and the focus of everything is productivity, keeping your people busy. Everybody's got a job to do it. Everybody in the house knows how to do it. And it just drives me crazy to see the way that there's just layers and layers of redundancy in our government, and then they bring in the National Guard to show people how to wear masks. What a wonderful state of Illinois government we have. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, it's right here in the press release. Yeah.
Arlene on the Northwest side.
Good morning. My husband was a veteran and very, very ill. I tried to get him into a facility for veterans. The list was so long, they said it would be many, many years. Put him in a nice facility. It cost me over $10,000 to keep him there. I was selling off everything I could because I didn't care how much it cost, but he passed away. But I thought maybe things would, you know, be better after Trump, and they are a little bit better, but there aren't even enough nursing homes for these people, and I'm ashamed how these veterans were treated. It breaks my heart to know that. Because when I was there with my husband, I was helping. The nurses aren't really nurses anymore as far as their training. They're more they give just medicine. They don't have time really for the patients. So I was helping out all these other people just, you know, to make it nice for them. So I hope things change, and I hope whoever's in charge gets they take care of him, get rid of him. That's correct. Thank you.
Thanks, Arlene.
And if anybody wants to help, ajlynchfoundation.org. ajlynchfoundation.org is where you can go.
Yeah, I mean, put Sergeant Allen, put Alan Lynch in charge of this.
He should be.
Forget
you
it.
Know what?
Bring him in as like as a general honoree, just, you know, during Katrina. Just bring him in and say, Alan Lynch is in charge. He's going to figure this out if he wants to take on the project. It sounds like he does, which is great. Just let him do it.
Be a general honoree.
Have somebody who actually has, you know, a public service and veterans at the forefront rather than these, you know, hack politicians playing cover my ass. Bill in Itasca. Hey, Bill.
Hey, got a question. You know, is there a big gorilla in the room that's not being addressed here? And that is, what unions do the workers belong to that work in these homes?
AFSCME, SEIU.
Mm-hmm.
The public sector unions that we all live to serve in Illinois. That's right.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But it never gets talked about, does it?
No.
Like a shell game.
You're right. You're right. Thanks for the call, Bill. Good point. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning. Bill just kind of stole my thunder. The workers have the unions to protect their silly asses from doing any work. And what unions do the National Guard have? None. It's called do your job, and they do it. I'm glad at least we have a professional National Guard here.
Thanks, Larry. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I like James Freeman's intro in his Best of the Web column yesterday. Hunter Biden may have wanted to hold 10% for the big guy, but did he forget to set aside 37% for Uncle Sam?
That's awesome.
That could be a problem. Tom Cotton on Fox yesterday talking about the need for a special counsel to investigate Hunter, and I would say, and I think he's intimating the same, Biden Inc. more generally.
There's allegations of securities fraud and money laundering related to Hunter Biden's Chinese businesses, a crooked hospital deal with Jim Biden, Joe Biden's brother out in western Pennsylvania. These investigations span multiple jurisdictions. And if Joe Biden becomes president, then all of those prosecutors are in line to be fired next month. If there were ever circumstances that created conflict of interest and called for a special counsel, I think those circumstances are present here.
Mm-hmm. I hope that special counsel's purview, if it were to come to pass, although what is the likelihood? It seems to me that the Bill Barr Justice Department needs to move in the next 5 weeks rather than leaving it to the Biden administration and his
administration's
attorney general.
They're like on autopilot right now.
But
phoning it in.
He's still the president of the United States. There is Attorney General Barr is still the Attorney General of the United States. They're still on the job, so there's opportunity there. And I hope if that does come to pass, again, the purview is expansive to include anyone in the media where you can make out something other than a discretionary decision-making. In other words, working directly with any of these interests, whether on the Biden Inc. side or the Chi-Com side. And I have no evidence that that occurred, but I do have their work product in the weeks leading up to the election, and that's a basis to perhaps do a deeper dig. Certainly we have seen journalists before collaborating with interested parties or parties that they're otherwise charged with covering. And I just think that what they did to collude, to borrow a word, with Biden Inc. and with the Chinese communists, among other foreign entities, to help Joe Biden over the finish line on November 3rd, if that's what the final tally is, needs a reckoning. And there's no doubt. I mean, the spiking of the New York Post story, the combination of the D.C. press corps collectively ignoring it, other than the Post, and you know, conservative outlets, combined with big tech coming in over the top. I mean, that you want to talk to me about a $120,000 Facebook ad campaign from 2016, but you don't want to address the entire communication infrastructure, with a few notable exceptions, working to help Joe Biden across the finish line by bearing this story. And again, we've seen the research on this. I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, it was something like one in three. I think it was one in three Democrats, like swing Democrat voters in swing states, would have changed their vote if they would have known about Hunter Biden, what they were told in the survey that the Media Research Center did. If they would have known about the New York Post story and the allegations swirling around Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, the big guy, that could have changed their vote. So that's what I'm talking about when there's material support to suggest that that collusion helped Joe Biden achieve victory.
And
on
some
November 3rd.
Of those voters that were asked that also early voted too and couldn't take their vote back because they did the mail-in ballots.
And
so yeah, that's another reason why I don't like mail-in ballots, because lots can change between now and even 2 days from now.
And Tom Cotton, you know, raises the question that was being raised by the few people like us and the few other outlets, including New York Post. You know, the stuff that was raised by Tony Bobulinski and the documents he provided, the interview he did with Tucker Carlson, which we've talked about at length. The big guy, Hunter Biden, referencing his father on a call. This demands questions being put right to Joe Biden that were never put to him.
Hunter Biden flew all over the world with him. Joe Biden said they never talked about their business. Hunter Biden said they did. Emails from his laptop show they did as well. And really, on two 14-hour flights to and from China, do we really think Joe Biden never once said to Hunter Biden, so what are you doing in China, son? To borrow from one of Joe Biden's favorite phrases, come on, man.
Glenn Greenwald, he of The Intercept, again, one of the individuals who was stand-up during this, he resigned from The Intercept, an outlet he co-founded, because the editorial staff, I mean the editor in charge of the outlet, wouldn't let him pursue the Hunter Biden story. Remember, we talked about that. The outlet he co-founded, he resigned from in protest over the unwillingness to cover the Hunter Biden story, to ask the pertinent questions, because they could make the Bidens uncomfortable, and even worse, they could cost Biden the election. So we can't investigate these things now. We'll do a little pro forma investigation, because Hunter Biden has conceded that there is a criminal investigation that is ongoing into his payment of taxes, among other things, as Cotton pointed out. And this is not news either. As Jonathan Turley said yesterday on Fox regarding laptops that were subpoenaed last year.
You know, back in October, Senator Ron Wyden and Chuck Schumer were asking the Justice Department not to investigate Hunter Biden. Many of us have been following this story for a very long time. There's been a blackout in the media. They've just refused to really press Joe Biden on it. What we do know is that there is an investigation going forward. That's not that much of a surprise, because the laptop was subpoenaed. They don't just do that for recreational purposes.
Right. Just like the feds don't do civil investigations, they do criminal ones. So this is not really news. It's just news to the D.C. press corps, at least they're pretending it is, because they want to cover their tracks from what they did in the weeks leading up to the election, particularly after that New York Post story broke. But going back to Glenn Greenwald, I mean, he's got it sussed out very nicely, I think. And he speaks to the media's criminal conduct. Now, I think he means that informally, but perhaps formally in some respects with some. I don't know, but I wouldn't put it past these people.
Well, I still think we need to recognize what a historic crime and disgrace this is, not only in journalism, but as soon as these documents became known, the operatives in the intelligence community, the CIA, John Brennan, James Clapper, Michael Hayden, all the standard professional liars, issued a letter claiming that this material was the hallmark of Russian information, disinformation, actually, even though they had no basis for thinking that. And that gave the media permission to lie to the public continuously, and Silicon Valley to censor these materials. So not only did the public not become aware of them, they were lied to, not only by claiming that Russia was involved, even though there's zero evidence that they were and no one thinks that, but also by calling it disinformation. The implication was these documents were forgeries, when now we know that the criminal investigation that's been ongoing is about the very transactions that these documents covered. This is an incredible crime by the corporate media to lie to the public and bury information before an election, but also, again, domestic interference on the part of intelligence agencies in order to manipulate the outcome of our election.
Yeah. The professional liars, perfect characterization of the Jim Clappers and others who, you know, signed that. We, you know, this smacks of Russian disinformation. We have no basis to make the conclusion that this is the case, but it smacks of Russian disinformation. Let's bring a Clapper and all the ladies and gentlemen back for their to well, I mean, they're going to get softballed on MSNBC right. and CNN. But, I mean, does it sound like Russian disinformation now?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And I'm shocked at all the money that Hunter has made, you know, because of his his connection with Ukraine and China because of his father. I mean, they still have a $112,000 lien on their property from the IRS, him and his ex-wife, Kathleen. So they don't know, they don't think that this has anything to do with it, but it's a possibility. A lien on their property for unpaid taxes.
Greenwald also continued on, and this is important because it connects the dots. These are not independent actors. These are allied forces, and you have to understand that about those professional liars in intel agencies, in law enforcement agencies, in the federal government, and the professional liars running around pretending to be intrepid journalists.
And so the media partnered with them based on the premise that the Trump presidency was dangerous, which is fine. If the media really wants to believe that the Trump presidency poses a danger, that's their prerogative. But what they don't have the right to do is to become disinformation agents. And the CIA and all of those guys in the intelligence community were open about the fact that they wanted Donald Trump to lose and then they wanted to sabotage his presidency. Remember, Chuck Schumer told Rachel Maddow in early 2017 that the CIA was going to sabotage Trump's presidency if he continued to criticize them. And that was the story of the last 4 years, a union between the intelligence agencies that fed lies to the media that mindlessly repeated it for their own interests.
Brad in the West Loop, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, just on this Joe Biden story and Hunter, is it entirely possible that that's the only reason Joe ran is because he knew this going to come out and this is the only way he could quell it? I mean, it'd be a double-edged sword because then it would draw more attention to it. But
I don't know.
He said he ran because of what happened in Charlottesville.
Well, yeah, okay.
He said.
I mean, come on. Yes, right.
But
thanks for the call, Brad. I don't know. Yeah, it would seem to counterintuitive that this would be a way to cover up what Hunter Biden and the entire Biden family, let's not forget, had been doing.
His brother Joe, too.
I mean, where would the audience be for the audience just would be so much smaller for the sort of research that Peter Schweitzer did, for example, that really, as usual, is checking out, just like it did with his Clinton Cash book on Hillary Clinton and Clinton Inc. Now you have Joe Biden and Biden Inc. I'm sorry, what's the difference other than a formal foundation to launder money through, especially foreign money? They just cut out the, you know, let's not set up the facade of a foundation. Let's just go right at it. We'll dispatch our people and our relatives and put together little teams. And, you know, hey, brother, you go down to Central America. Hunter, go ahead out to China, Ukraine.
And what were they really paying for? I mean, bottom line, think about it. Just access to the White House. Really?
Yes.
I mean, what were they paying
for? That's what they were paying for.
Yeah.
Terry in Rogers Park.
Yeah, I wonder if Obama got his cut of Biden's China money. I think he probably did. If he didn't, they wouldn't be such good friends now.
All right, Terry. I don't think Obama needed it. He had all his money lined up.
And Michelle, she's a honey making money too there, don't forget.
Ed in Oak Brook.
Their new book.
Yeah, you know what? This is why I think the Supreme Court is going to rule for Texas, because don't think that these guys just look at law books. They see what's going on. They see that the Democrats are nothing but liars. After all, a couple of them, or three or four, were actually victims of their lies. Plus, they realize that there's a China threat. They know that Joe Biden is nothing but a cardboard character. So, you know what? The Supreme Court has to answer to nobody. And I'm listening to all these law professors on various shows, and they're saying there's no case here, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? There's a real big case here because the American people are at threat with this. And you talk about this Biden thing. How did I know about it 7 years ago? You guys have been talking about it for 7 years. And now you're blaming the media because they didn't put anything. It's because people are stupid. They don't want to learn. They put their head in the sand and they just march on and they just listen to all of this crap. Turn Facebook off, turn Twitter off, and reject the media, and you'll be way better off.
All right, Ed, thanks. Brian in Oak Forest.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday.
I don't know if you saw the tweet I left you guys with my new shirt. It's pretty awesome.
Okay, well, what's your Twitter handle?
How about just
what is it?
At Patrick Tequila.
And I
tagged you guys yesterday.
What's the T-shirt?
I made some shirts.
What's the
it
T-shirt?
Says Muck-tifedia. Muck-tifedia.
Muck-tifedia. There you go.
Oh,
all
there
right,
you
thanks,
go.
Mark.
Like Muck Fishigan. Okay. I see what you did there.
Mac and Griffith.
Hey, it's Mad Mac Cowguys, buddy. Hey, I got a serious question. I'd love to say something funny, but how bad do you think it'll be if we lose both seats in Georgia? Because in my opinion, if we lose both, it is totally 100% the end of the Republican Party. It is over.
I don't know about that. Thanks for the call, Mac. You know, the prediction of the demise of these parties is always greatly exaggerated. So I don't think that, but it would be a catastrophic occurrence. It would be, batten down the hatches for 2 years and try to survive until November of 2022. It would be bad. There's no question.
Well, there's Joe Manchin, Susan Collins.
Yeah. Joe Manchin and Susan Collins.
Are they dating?
What are you talking about?
No, I'm saying if both seats in Georgia go Democratic, you still have Joe Manchin, who's, sometimes he votes on the right, not always dedicated to the party, but more of the cause, the policy. And same with Susan Collins. She's an independent.
Yeah, but you don't have control of the Senate. So, I mean, Susan Collins is a 50th vote, not a 51st vote.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, Manchin has said, we're not going to do this pact,
yeah,
the Supreme Court thing.
Have the Supreme Court or make Puerto Rico or
we'll see. Maybe. But
he's on record as saying that. Hopefully he won't.
There's all kinds of people go on record and saying all kinds of things that they turn around and do the opposite. I don't like Joe Manchin being the only thing between us and sort of the backdoor unraveling of the Constitution. I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Joe Manchin is sort of not enough of a Maginot line for me. Bill in LaSalle County.
Hey, good morning. If the worst case scenario happens and Biden is our president, don't worry. He will pardon his brother and he will pardon his son. But isn't there something the FCC can do against the broadcast communication news networks for this?
Well, what do you have in mind? I mean, you're allowed to, report misinformation.
Oh, pull their license.
Yeah, but on what basis? Yeah.
I'm not a legal expert. But you know what? The deliberate misinformation that they did to interfere with the election would be it.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. I don't want to pull their licenses. I don't suggest that. I'm a, bad speech, the cure for bad speech, more speech. That's me. I want to win the arguments and expose and arm people with information so they can do the same. But if anybody crossed the line and was no longer acting as a journalist, even though they, were running around with their scoop hat on, that's a different story. And I think they should be looked at. I definitely do. Because you are talking about Chinese communists and other adversaries of America. Being a journalist doesn't insulate you from the rule of law completely. Shocking to them, I know. Marvin in Burlington.
Yeah, good morning. I think the story on Biden is a real confirmation of what most people with any common sense watching this stuff over the years knows, that this Washington cabal of establishment politicians that are there decades after decades are there, and it's them against the American people. And I don't think this is just the start of the scandal. I think there's Republicans in on it, too. I think there's a big scandal concerning the foreign aid that goes to countries and gets kicked back to certain politicians. They don't want that out in the open. And journalists have been playing loose and fast with the intelligence departments for decades. All World War I, World War II, they put skewed stories in the newspapers to get the American public on board with whatever they might want to do, and this is just all a confirmation of that. And Trump was not playing ball with these people on both sides. And there's a lot of so-called conservative Republicans that want him out of office is just as much or worse than the Democrats.
Thanks for the call, Marvin. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
You stink.
I think you're going to have a good Christmas, all right?
You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories. Only the biggest guests. And only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and interesting Twitter thread from the Great Barrington Declaration crowd. And it is a crowd, by the way. I know this doesn't get much coverage or attention in the D.C. press corps, from the D.C. press corps. But, you know, this is the collaborative work of some of the leading epidemiologists in the world, from some of the leading institutions in the world, Martin Kulldorff from Harvard, Sunetra Gupta from Oxford, and Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford, and some 50,000 medical professionals, actual medical doctors, public health professionals have signed the declaration, as have some, you know, more than 500,000 just ordinary people like you or me, in support of opposing thoughtless lockdown policies. So in this sort of second wave of lockdowns, in some respects, even more arbitrary and draconian than the first wave back in the spring, as they're being imposed around the country, particularly in big cities and big blue states. Great Barrington Declaration responded on Twitter, "We are resolute in our criticism of the lockdown response to COVID. There's a growing body of evidence-based studies that show the collateral damage being caused by the current approach is causing devastating harm that will be felt for years. Since March of 2020, cancer screening has been suspended, routine diagnostic work deferred, and only urgent symptomatic cases prioritized for diagnostic intervention." And they cite in that one part of the thread to a study published in The Lancet detailing the increases in the number of avoidable cancer deaths in England. The pandemic has resulted in an inflation in acute cardiovascular disease, and there's a study supporting that. I won't get into the details here for time's sake, but our elders are suffering terribly from isolation, depression, and deteriorating mental health. The children growing up in this year have faced so many challenges and suffered untold harm and overwhelming isolation. People battling drug and alcohol addictions have relapsed as support groups close their doors. Men, women, and children living with violent partners and partners have been trapped due to the lockdown. Vaccination programs have been halted, the result of which will be catastrophic for so many. Tuberculosis will surge, and polio cases are rising. Poverty and famine, already a global issue, is now going to affect more of the vulnerable. And again, there's sort of supporting stories in all of this. And by the way, this against the backdrop of the UN World Food Program being conferred the Nobel Peace Prize, for the work they're trying to do to maintain supply lines for food and supplies in the developing world from the first world, despite these lockdown policies, which, again, the UN Special Envoy for COVID opposes.
Here in Chicago, University of Chicago says, yeah, we have hospitalizations up in part because people put off going to see their doctors and oncologists and the screenings that are needed. And that's why they have a surge in beds.
They put them off, or they were forced to put
them
off?
They were forced to put them off.
Right.
They wouldn't let, the doctor's offices were closed.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Daniel Klein, professor of economics and the Gin Chair at the Mercatus Center, George Mason University, associate fellow at the Ratio Institute in Stockholm, and chief editor of Econ Journal Watch. Daniel Klein, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, first, before we get to all things related to COVID and lockdown policy, when will George Mason University be renaming itself Colin Kaepernick University or something a little bit more temperate? I note in Falls Church, Virginia, George Mason and Thomas Jefferson have both been removed per the school board as appropriate individuals to honor with their name on a school.
I hope never, and it'd be a real shame. And I'm sure people would speak out against it. So we'll see.
Yeah. I hope so too, but these are the times. It's just worth noting what's happening at the K through 12 level too. It's not just the universities, as we try to remind people. So talking about lockdown policies, and the Great Barrington Declaration is holding fast based on what they've always stated as those signatories as contained in their declaration. But Sweden, and since you're over at the Ratio Institute in Stockholm, has relented a bit. Anders Tegnell has seemed to be sidelined a bit, and the politicians are moving more in the direction of some of the lockdown policies of their Scandinavian and Western European neighbors. Why?
I think the government, not Tegnell is my understanding, but the government itself, is succumbing some to just all the international pressures, as well as maybe some public sentiment that just has the do something mentality. I think it's a real shame. I do think that the backpedaling on kind of leaving things open is overstated. That is to say, a lot of the leftist press is overstating the extent to which lockdown is now being reinstated in Sweden. I was in Stockholm City yesterday in the grocery stores and so on, and very few people are wearing masks. A lot of the rules are still only advisory or recommended. So as I say, I think that the backpedaling is less than reported.
And the beauty of Sweden is you never had hard lockdowns and you always kept your schools open. Now, I know some high schools and universities were closed for a few weeks in March, but don't you feel free over there? And aren't
yes.
you proud of the government
yes.
over there compared to what we're going through?
Absolutely, without question. I'm sorry to see the backpedaling to the extent that it does exist, but still, yes, it feels much freer over here.
And don't you think lockdowns are more about politicians grasping for power than about science?
Something like that. It's definitely not science. It's definitely not concern for the well-being of society, at least not a sound concern. I think people are in sort of a denial and a delusion. I think it's a kind of madness. It's politics. You guys were reviewing all of the ill consequences that come from not just, you know, that there's a disease out there, which is real, but the lockdown itself and the frenzy and panic that's been propounded by hysterical media and others. And those other factors, the frenzy and the lockdown, I think are the main causes of all those ill consequences. And when people, advocate lockdowns, they just seem to ignore all that collateral damage, as you called it.
there may have been a bit of a watershed moment just thinking about this in economic terms, at least from an analytical point of view. With this L.A. County judge that issued an injunction against the prohibition on outdoor dining in L.A. County. And in his opinion, he just said, you know, basically you have no evidentiary basis for this. No risk-benefit analysis was done. I mean, what a concept that risk-benefit analysis would be done before a policy was pursued.
Yeah, it's amazing what's going on without any evidence. I mean, there's no real evidence that lockdowns even reduce COVID deaths. It's not at all clear that it's significant. Meanwhile, it's creating all these other ill consequences. They go on and on, the ill consequences. They're economic, they're personal, they're moral and cultural. We're getting used to trampling of civil liberties, breakdown of the rule of law, being tyrannized by our government. You got to wonder what kind of nefarious impulses are behind this.
Well, and just on the sort of the moving of the goalposts or the, you know, recasting of expectations once we achieve a certain milestone. So one of the milestones is, of course, the vaccine being mm-hmm. finally approved by the FDA at some point in the hopefully not too distant future.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
No, it was advised. The working group advised the approval. That's not the same thing. We still don't have the approval, so you still can't release it. But when that does happen, now what's the story now? Something that has been said previously, including by Fauci, but wasn't paid much attention to because it's just all hands on deck, vaccine, 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 and then we'll be America pre-COVID-19 again. Hold the phone. Vaccine may not prevent spread. So now when the vaccine is distributed, they'll say, well, it's great. It's starting to be distributed. But it doesn't necessarily mean it'll prevent the spread. We don't know how long the antibodies last, so on and so forth. So we're going to have to continue with these policies that we've had in place for the last, going on 10 months.
Yeah, you guys called me originally because I wrote this piece for AIER, Darth Sidious's Lockdown. Darth Sidious, for those who don't know, is the evil Sith Lord in Star Wars. And, you know, what we see in terms of consequences of an action, what we see depends a great deal on what we think is intended. And if all of this was being done by Darth Sidious, for whatever reason, because he's an evil Sith Lord, then we would look for evil consequences and we would be seeing all those ill consequences and we would be screaming about them. But because there's this narrative of Dr. Fauci, well and good intentions, there's more attention to the supposed good consequences of reducing COVID infections and deaths, and the other gets thrown into darkness. So I think we got to start just thinking, like, what are the real intentions behind this? Or at least figure that they're not good. Like, we might just throw up our hands and say, I don't know what those people are thinking and why they're doing what they're doing. But we have to look at all the consequences, and then we see how catastrophic and calamitous this policy has been.
You referenced in your piece the Darth Sidious analogy, and if people don't know who Darth Sidious is, then shame on you. You better go watch the Star Wars movies. But you mentioned Nobel laureate Ronald Coase, too, and his dissertation on the problem of social cost and how that's applicable here.
Yeah, well, he said when you're considering a policy measure like lockdown, and let's say you're comparing that to no lockdown, to, you know, leaving things as they were before all of this, you have to consider all of the consequences, the total effect, as he put it. And the total effect and ill consequences goes on and on. It's really tragic and catastrophic what's happening. And people are just not responsibly facing up to the total effect of lockdown.
He is Daniel Klein. He is professor of economics and gin chair at the Mercatus Center, George Mason University, associate fellow at the Ratio Institute in Stockholm, and chief editor of Econ Journal Watch. Professor Klein, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Byron York, in his daily memo over at the Washington Examiner, recounts some instant classics. There's absolutely no evidence to indicate that either Biden did anything improper. That was former FBI number two man Andy McCabe on CNN September 20th of 2019.
Oh my gosh.
As the impeachment battle began. There is absolutely no evidence of that any of these allegations are true, said CNN correspondent Jessica Dean the next day. We need to state here explicitly there's absolutely no evidence of wrongdoing by either Joe Biden or his son Hunter Biden, said CNN anchor Victor Blackwell, September 2019. The talk went on through September, October, November, beyond. There's absolutely no evidence that either did anything wrong, said Don Lemon, November 6th.
Well, then they were just refusing to look at the information.
Right.
Because it was there.
And it just persisted and persisted and persisted until Hunter Biden disclosed this week that, I'm not saying I did anything wrong. In fact, I'll be vindicated. Of course, he said that, but acknowledged that there is an FBI investigation into his into the payment of his taxes. And Tom Cotton suggested, there's more than just that on Fox yesterday, Senator Tom Cotton.
There's allegations of securities fraud and money laundering related to Hunter Biden's Chinese businesses, a crooked hospital deal with Jim Biden, Joe Biden's brother out in western Pennsylvania. These investigations span multiple jurisdictions. And if Joe Biden becomes president, then all of those prosecutors are in line to be fired next month. If there were ever circumstances that created conflict of interest and called for a special counsel, I think those circumstances are present here.
And there's the call for a special counsel, and obviously to happen before there would be a change in administrations. In addition to that, of course, this is not news. We have Senators Grassley and Johnson, their report on Hunter Biden's foreign business dealing. We have so much here. And Jonathan Turley, George Washington University law professor, you know, made the point that we do know that subpoenas were previously issued like a year ago, and that's not just a pro forma exercise that federal authorities do.
You know, back in October, Senator Ron Wyden and Chuck Schumer were asking the Justice Department not to investigate Hunter Biden. You know, many of us have been following this story for a very long time. There's been a blackout in the media. They've just refused to really press Joe Biden on it. What we do know is that there is an investigation going forward. That's not that much of a surprise because the laptop was subpoenaed. They don't just do that for recreational purposes. And on the laptop were some really disturbing emails. And as a lawyer, you look at it and there was an informality, a fluidity to these business deals that were being discussed, millions of dollars involving Hunter Biden, his uncle, and references to Joe Biden. There were gifts like a diamond that came from China. All of these things tend to worry you as an attorney because there's so much of this in play, and it's easy to violate laws, including tax laws. The other thing is that when you have a tax investigation, that ultimately looks at all of these transactions, all of this money, and whether you pay taxes on what you received.
Right. As James Freeman of the Wall Street Journal observed, I don't know if Hunter set aside 10% for the big guy, right, but the real issue is whether he set aside 37% for the IRS. The thing, too, here that's frustrating, this investigation apparently started back in 2018. So the media blackout in advance of November 3rd is frustrating, beyond frustrating, really. But also the interminable nature of these investigations, whether it's the Durham investigation or the Hunter Biden investigation, it could have been ostensibly completed well in advance of the 2020 election, where it would have been impossible to ignore if there were, if there was any prosecution, obviously, of Hunter Biden or any other Biden family member. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Brett Baer. Of course, he's the host of Special Report, PM Chicago time, weekdays on Fox. Number one bestselling author of 3 Days at the Brink, FDR's Daring Gamble to Win World War II. Brett, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, Brett, first of all, I want to say I'm glad that your son is doing well after his fourth open heart surgery. I saw the picture that you posted on Instagram, and I have to tell you, he's 13. He's going to be taller than you.
He is closing in already. I mean, he's got size 11 and a half shoes. He's 13. He's crazy big. So he's doing great. He's home recovering and out of the hospital, and the doctors and nurses at Children's National are to credit. So we have some more recovering to do, but we'll do it at home, which is a big, big deal.
Keep a basketball in his hands. Make sure he's working on his dribbling and ball handling skills while he's recuperating. And for those of you who don't remember it, Brett wrote a book about it about, half a dozen years ago, Special Heart, right?
That's right, yeah. That was the first, he's been through four of these now and 10 angioplasties. So that was kind of a book about our journey and in an effort to help other families that have to go through that. Everybody has something. This is our something.
Well, good stuff. We're glad to hear that he's recuperating, and obviously our entire listening audience will keep your family in our thoughts and prayers. We appreciate that and appreciate your openness about it, too, to be other regarding in terms of wanting to help other families, which is very nice. On to politics and what Professor Turley had to say, what Tom Cotton wants in terms of a special counsel. Where do you see this Hunter Biden matter going now that there's been an admission that your colleagues in the media can't ignore?
Yeah, there's two sides of the story, right? I mean, there's the media side, which is pretty egregious if you look at it just objectively. We often look through the prism of what would this look like if it was someone tied to President Trump, if it was a Trump family member, and what would the media coverage be? And it's pretty easy to get there in your head. So the fact that it's still like a grudgingly coverage of this story is, as you said, frustrating for media watchers. I think the other side of the story is the substance. I think it's interesting that a Hunter Biden statement was put out on a Biden-Harris transition, statement, memo put out to the press. I think that's indicating damage control, before January 20th. And you've got this investigation. You've got the investigation into his brother, James Biden. Investigations can drag on. You're right. But they can also be an albatross for an administration that's trying to get going.
And the report in the Wall Street Journal this week that Attorney General Barr worked to keep Hunter Biden probes from public view during the election, even though he knew about these investigations for months. It seems to me that that reporting is some effort to suggest that Barr is some sort of double operative or something like this. When in point of fact, as Turley pointed out, as I mentioned at the outset, I mean, this is not news. There has been reporting on this. It's just news. It's pretending to be news to so many in the D.C. press corps. So Attorney General Barr was probably trying to not make comment on it to keep it from public view for the purposes of maintaining the integrity of the investigation as the nation's chief law enforcement officer. That was my read on it.
Yeah, 100%. It's amazing how the story has turned. Now Barr is the anti-Trump figure who's holding things back, right? Before that, he was the attorney general in the pocket of the president who was doing his bidding at every turn. And so now the narrative has turned. In reality, he is probably just doing what he said he was going to do at the beginning, and that is keep DOJ, FBI out of the election, as opposed to what happened with Jim Comey.
Well, what do you think is going to happen if President-elect Biden takes office? I mean, is this investigation going to disappear?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what the DOJ is going to do. I don't know if a special counsel is the way it's going to go. Clearly, if Republicans control the Senate and they win one of the two Georgia runoff seats to do that, I think there'll be hearings that continue. I mean, obviously, you mentioned Senator Johnson, Senator Grassley. There are other possibilities of where that could surface. And, investigations don't just disappear. And if they do, there'll be a lot of questions about how they did.
What about an investigation into this Chinese communist Mata Hari, as she's being termed, that befriended Representative Eric Swalwell, among others, and the calls for Swalwell to step down from the House Intel Committee because of the lack of disclosure, at minimum, back in 2015 as to what was going on?
Well, I think it's going to continue. You heard the House Minority Leader call for that, again, through the prism of what would happen the other way. Imagine Devin Nunes has a relationship with a Russian who is later characterized as a spy, and he puts an intern in his office. Where are we on coverage? So I think Swalwell, you forget that he, was this up-and-coming figure, and he ran for president. I don't know how he thought, knowing what he knew, getting the defensive briefing, that that was not going to be an issue should he win the nomination.
Right. And Nancy Pelosi's response yesterday was very curious to me, because it's one thing to say, we were briefed at the same time, we were apprised of this, we didn't disclose it publicly because it could have compromised national security. That would require more probing. But it's another thing when somebody does such an obvious, painful segue to a misdirection when she says, the House Republican caucus is suborning somebody who believes in QAnon conspiracy theories. I'm sorry, whether that's true or not, a QAnon Twitter feed, Chinese communists do not pose the same national security threat.
Right. And, in Swalwell's defense or pushback that we really should be looking at the leak from the Trump administration. Do we think that President Trump, with all his tweets that come out regularly, that we kind of know his inner thinking all day long,
Do we think that somehow he's going to keep an investigation of Swalwell and a Chinese spy quiet before an election? I just don't think that's the case. I mean, Axios was working on this story for a year, and kudos to them for getting it across the finish line. But I do think it opens the door to a lot of questions about how much China is doing this and who's involved. And if you listen to the FBI director, they're opening up a counterintelligence case tied to China every 10 hours.
Really? And I love how Swalwell won't come forward. 5,000
of them.
Yeah. And he won't come forward and say whether or not they had a physical relationship or what the extent of their relationship was. He dances around it.
Yeah. I mean, when the answer is no, they're not going to answer. I think the answer is the answer. Yeah.
Exactly.
He is Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special reporter, 5 p.m. Chicago time, weekdays, best-selling author, 3 Days at the Brink, FDR's Daring Gamble to Win World War II. That's his latest. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you. And also the other book, Special Hearted Journey of Faith, Hope, Courage, and Love. It is a great gift for Christmas. And Brett Baer joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. This is a new segment we're developing just called COVID Living. Since we're going to be living like this in perpetuity to varying degrees depending on where you live, let's just COVID Living.
Okay.
Not learning to live with COVID. Learning to live for COVID, because that's what the government says we should do. And one of the things I think we could do to advance our accommodation of living for COVID is to finalize the infantilization of ourselves. Let's, you know, provide the state some assistance on infantilizing us. It's one thing to abide and support and celebrate COVID enthusiasts that we are, the face diaper. I think it's quite another, and I think it's a good idea. And it's not mine. It's the Chinese communists came up with it, so there you go. This is we've got an incoming administration potentially that are big fans, so it seems like an opportune time to follow their lead and to actually wear diapers.
Yeah, flight attendants, excuse me, in China were advised to wear diapers for virus protection. I know many people are taking precautions on flights to prevent the spread of coronavirus, but in China, they're really taking this precaution. The Civil Aviation Administration of China has released new guidelines for flight personnel. Are you ready on the list? Number one, wear a diaper so as to not go into the washroom to spread germs. Just wear a diaper and pee and poop in your pants. It's come down to this.
Yeah, it's avoid infection. And so maybe if maybe this is something you can ask Triple Threat or Pritzker, the next presser. If we wear diapers, can we resume dining inside? Because then we won't go to the bathroom.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, we'll go to the bathroom. But
we'll go in our pants.
Right here, seated, yeah.
So the question is, when your pants, the diaper, because eventually it will fill up, especially on these long, you know,
sure.
14, 15-hour
yeah.
flights.
Yeah.
Don't you have to go in the bathroom to change your diaper that you're wearing?
That's a bit of a conundrum. Yeah.
I mean, do you think flight attendants wearing diapers is a good way to prevent any spread of a virus?
I think it's
312-642-5600.
No, I don't. I think everybody wearing a diaper.
Well, what would you do if your boss told you that you have to wear a diaper at work?
I would say thank you for saving my life. And you know what? Out of an abundance of caution, that's what I'm going to do. So if Jeff Reisman tells me that I have to wear a diaper to do the show, then I'm going to wear a diaper. Actually, you know what? I may volunteer to do it just to lead by example, to be sort of COVID forward in
yeah.
my thinking.
Yeah, you have to live for COVID now.
I live for right. COVID. And then I'll say, excuse me, I have to go change myself. I did duty in my pants, and a bureaucrat is going to come and observe my changing.
I will tell you this. I have a friend in Elk Grove Village who her mother, mm-hmm. She visits her once a week. And her stepfather is so COVID crazy that when she has to go to the bathroom, they will not let her use the bathroom. She has to relieve herself in a bucket in the garage. And then they leave like a little, not a doggy bag, but so when she, if she has to wipe herself, she puts it in the jewel plastic bag and then.
It's graphic. Thank
well,
you.
Well, I'm just saying, isn't that absolutely insane?
Safety.
She could go to the bathroom and then Clorox wipe everything down. I mean, if that's so, but people are so lobotomized by our government and because they have scared them so badly that they're making relatives pee and poop in a bucket in the garage.
Stay together in your pants, right? That's what she said. Mark in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a place in Mount Prospect you guys used to talk about that pay people to live in diapers? You know,
yeah.
I think how much money they, you know, adult maybe babies. They should franchise and train us. As for my COVID-19 living suggestion, I think our masks should be color-coded to represent our role in society, and then maybe matching armbands that could list our religious and sexual preferences.
Yes.
Yeah,
like
I'm writing
that.
A book about that. It's called My Struggle, and it'll also be available in German.
In the original
well.
German? Yeah, I got it.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mark. Yeah. What do you think about that?
That's a whole subculture, though, that he was talking about, that Mount Prospect store where they've got oversized chairs, like high chairs for you, and they have oversized cribs.
Adult babies.
Adult diaper, because they're adult babies.
Yeah, we're all being treated like adult babies, so let's play the part.
Oh, yeah. Get pacifiers. They have the big pacifiers there. I went there once.
It'd be like Steve Martin in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels when he goes.
You get yourself a little bond.
When he goes to the bathroom at the table. May I go to the bathroom? Yes. And he just sits there and he goes to the bathroom. Thank you. Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Woo!
Hey, guys. You can make fun all you want, but I have been wearing a diaper for years. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm at a bar, I wear the diaper. I don't have to leave my drink. Vodka gimlet. I order another one. No getting up. No bathroom. Keep going.
There you go. Power through it. Thanks for the call, Joe.
Power through it.
David and McCook.
Hey, happy Friday, guys. Joe Biden wears a diaper, so I was wondering, do you think he'll pass an executive order making all of us do the same?
I don't know. Does he? Thanks for the call. Has that been confirmed?
No, I don't know. I never heard that before.
Somebody should ask.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Out of an abundance of caution.
Are you
in order
a diaper?
To stay safe. Right.
But it's so stupid because these flight attendants have to go when their diaper is full. They have to go to the bathroom to change diapers, to just change the disposable diaper.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they shoot it out of an airlock or something. Maybe they don't have to.
I hate flushing those toilets.
I don't know.
I feel like I'm going to be sucked in.
Go to the bathroom in your pants alone together. I'm trying to come up with a hashtag for this so that Lori Lightfoot and Pritzker can repeat it, scold us at their press conferences.
Yeah, this is so embarrassing.
No, it's wonderful. Abundance of caution, safetyism. Speaking of masks or face diapers, now that we're talking about face diapers here, not the diapers. I don't know if this will apply to sports either, but maybe if athletes started wearing diapers as well, didn't have to go to the locker room, maybe more sports could come back online. The basketball coach at Alabama, Nate Oates is his name, he responded to Coach K, the canonized Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, suggesting that the NCAA reexamine its decision to allow for the basketball season. Listen to what Nate Oates had to say.
Can I ask you something? I just want to know your opinion. Do you think if Coach K hadn't lost the 2 non-conference games at home, if he'd still be saying that?
Probably not.
Okay. I just wanted you to say it, not me. So, here's my deal on it. I think we'd have a whole lot more problems if we weren't playing games. Like, everybody talks about COVID. Here's the other thing. If COVID's so bad, I'm trying to do my best to keep the mask up. I've already had COVID, so I don't even – technically, I shouldn't have to keep it up. Nobody can get it from me. No, I'm still within the 150 days that the NCAA's recommended. I see all these other guys that haven't had it, and they're masked down the whole game. It's like they got a chin strap on. So if they're really worried about COVID, you'd think their mask would be up the whole game, right? Like, I mean, so I think some of them are using no, we should be playing, in my opinion. We 100% should be playing basketball. Nobody talks about the mental – there's a kid – out of Detroit that went to another high major that I just talked to his uncle the other day because his cousin played for me in Detroit. He went to a high major school somewhere, mental health issue, came home because he was quarantined for weeks on end when he got there. Like, what are these guys going to do? If I got three daughters, like, they need to be in school. Like, humans aren't made to sit alone in isolation for weeks and weeks on end. We got it.
Months.
We got to be careful with how we do life, but you still got to do life.
Yeah, well,
that's so true.
Easier in a diaper. George and Moni, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, I was just wondering, are we going to have General Motors make these required diapers?
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. Yeah, we're going to scramble the ingenuity and capacity of Fortune 100 companies to get these diapers made. And, George,
you know the
problem, the distribution. Oh. So we're going to have to get FedEx and UPS, maybe doses of vaccine with the diaper. How about that?
Yeah, well, who's going to provide these expensive diapers for the poor? I mean, we're going to have to pay for that, right? As taxpayers?
Are expensive.
Johnson & Johnson, I don't know. Thanks for the call, George. I'm not sure.
Sponsored by Depends.
Depends, sure. Yeah. Tony and Steger.
Yeah, I think you should make a mandate that we wear a mask and a diaper for the first 100 days. And ain't diapers bad for the environment when you throw them out?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. We got plenty of landfill space, but I appreciate the concern, Tony.
It's a good idea. All these masks are clogging up sewer systems, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just 100 days for the diaper.
Oh, that's right. Just 100 days.
It's not forever.
It's just a two-week shutdown.
It's not forever for the diaper. It's just 100 days.
Just be patient.
Cindy and Joliet.
Oh, you guys are killing me this morning, but I've discovered an entrepreneurial opportunity with this conversation. We'd have diaper-changing stations scattered throughout the land, and guess what? Then we'd have an app that you could put on your phone for those more urgent matters when you have to, God, I got to get this diaper changed. I'm going into a meeting. You know, there's like a whole lot that can happen here, Dan. You ought to be jumping on board of that. You've got entrepreneurial spirit in you, and, you know, just like the car charging stations, there you go.
Thanks for the call, Cindy.
The diaper dump stations.
I like the idea, too, of mandating it for the kids in school. And this could be a real fig leaf for the olive branch for the teachers. Say, we're going to make it safe. Teachers and students have to wear diapers like everybody else, but particularly in school so that nobody needs to use the lavatory and that stops the spread.
Well, that was their point of contention. How are we going to control kids going to the bathroom? I mean, they might walk by each other in the hallway.
That problem solved.
Speaking of teachers, real quick, I got another email from CPS, CTU. We're not going to sacrifice our lives or the lives of our students for their political goals. So they're still talking about a strike.
Who's their political goals?
Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As if they're on different sides. It's so funny. Yeah. Look, let's just get everybody in diapers and we'll figure it out from there.
Teachers can wear diapers too. There you go. Then they can get back in school quickly.
Tom and Deer Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Did you just say something about Pritzker being in a diaper, Dan?
No. I'm saying I would think that he would lead by example if such a mandate were imposed, or maybe he would adopt the suggestion that we're making.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. What are you up to? I'm just envisioning this. Are you, like, trying to get long the futures market for raw materials or, like, buy Procter & Gamble stock? What's going on here?
Oh, yeah, probably. Is it Procter & Gamble? Would that be that'd be the big diaper maker, right? Yeah.
One of them, yeah. But good play. Keep it up. I'm going to watch the market today.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for the call, Tom. If I can get some buy-in, then, you know, I've got all these things set up. I got, I got my minority front so I can get, first in line with the city and state, get that certification, get one of those inside deals that are so nice here in Chicago and in Illinois. And then I'm off to the races. Yeah. So, it's just a thought. It's just a thought, you know. What do you think? Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here.
On AM 560.
We're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny F***ing K.
The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And Amy, you were homecoming queen, right?
Yes, I was. 1987, John Hersey High School. My Scantron number was 5B. Not like I remember it or anything, but yeah, I was.
Well, I'm waiting.
What about it? Oh, were you homecoming king?
No. That's not what I'm waiting for.
Did you go to prom?
It's not about me.
Okay.
Because I didn't participate in cisgender heteronormative horrors like you did. And I think you owe us all an apology.
Why? What are you talking about?
Excuse me.
Hello?
Excuse me. This isn't me saying it. I'm appealing to a higher authority. SMU's Human Rights Council.
Uh-oh.
The Human Rights Council on the campus of Southern Methodist University. Southern Methodist University. That's ostensibly a Christian one. Human Rights Council, which has participated in the last three homecomings at the school, now finds the homecomings to be a horrific affront to decency, and of course, decency being a synonym for gender neutrality. They have demanded a reversal of course for homecoming on the campus of SMU. You know, SMU's commitment to equality, to equal opportunity, includes non-discrimination on the basis of orientation and gender identity and expression, and a gendered homecoming is in violation. Abolish the use of gendered language in the homecoming process, including the offending phrases.
Yes,
exactly. Enable all participating organizations to nominate up to two candidates for homecoming royalty. Royalty, however, is not offensive. Interesting.
Yeah.
Provide all students the opportunity to cast votes for up to two candidates, on a single ballot, not separated by sex or gender identity.
Oh, so you could have two guys up there. You could have two girls up there. You could have a trans.
You could have two guys identifying as two girls.
That are boy. Yeah.
You could have anything that's possible under the sun. You know, this is perhaps in part inspired by Elliot, don't call me Ellen Page. The former Juno star made headlines when she went, well, she made headlines during the 2016 race when she was stalking Ted Cruz. And then she came out as a lesbian, and now she's
enough.
A guy.
Now she's got it. Yeah. When being a lesbian's not enough, you have to take it one step further.
You know who wrote the screenplay to Juno, by the way?
Who?
Diablo Cody.
Oh.
Bennett Academy grad. Oh. Right. She is
I love that movie.
She is the third most famous Bennett grad.
And where do you fall in line there?
It's Frank Kaminsky.
Oh, yeah.
Frank the Tank.
Frank
it's
the
me.
Tank. Oh, okay.
And it's Diablo Cody. Yeah. Not exactly,
anybody
but in my mind, it's
yes,
like
okay.
that. All right, for more on all of this, always enjoy the cultural commentary of one Chadwick Moore. He is a columnist for The Spectator. He joins us now. Chadwick, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. What about Elliot Page and whether or not those who made the offending film will have to go back and politically correct edit it so that Ellen Page's character can be an Elliot-type character, and he would have the addition, if you remember the movie Juno, that Ellen Page gets pregnant, and so now it would be in that the edited version, the updated version, it would be a man getting pregnant to confirm what we all know to be true, that men can be pregnant, Chadwick.
Well, what's great, I mean, now that Elliot is a big white man,
I'm sorry, Chadwick, you cut out on us. I'm sorry, say that again.
Where are the reparations for all of those female actresses that Elliot Page, who is a straight white male, always has been a straight white male, as took their roles, you know?
That's right.
Talking about equity in Hollywood?
Great point.
That's the one thing I want to know.
So she posted on Instagram that she came out as a transgender, meaning she was born one sex, identifies as the other, but it's also non-binary, which means she actually has no sex, correct?
Right. Yeah, now we're really getting into the weeds of it. So, but, you know, you're not supposed to question these things, right? And this is why it sort of speaks to a kind of boutique transgenderism that we see everywhere. It's the kind of behavior that you expect from teenagers these days. Elliot is Ellen Elliot is in her 30s. But it's the sort of thing you expect from teenagers seeking attention. Like, well, not only am I not a lesbian anymore, I'm trans, but I'm also non-binary. So I'm just going to keep you guessing. And you're just supposed to accept it and go along with it. You know, I think most people are just rolling their eyes and don't really care what some actress desperate for attention is saying. And then on the other hand, but I think what really annoys people is it's this, you know, we can kind of laugh and poke fun at this case, but what seems to annoy people most is it's that steady encroach on just trying to redefine the entire world and just trying to turn everything up on its head that we see the left doing now that they have no real substance thing to fight for. You know, every cause they have is sort of based on a lie or misinformation. And also it's flipping commonly held beliefs and the basis for civilization on its head as they seek their radical transformation into what they're not quite sure.
You know, there's a certain sadness that comes with Ellen Page becoming Elliot, and that's that she can't be a football kicker in the Southeastern Conference anymore. She's disqualified from perhaps getting a scholarship to kick at Vanderbilt.
Yes, that's true. That's very true. So we're going to miss out on that, unfortunately.
And it's going to be interesting to see moving forward what kind of roles she's going to, you know, apply for or try out for. Is she going to try to be a male character? Or is she masculine enough to play a male character? Or
Elliot Page is RuPaul in the RuPaul story.
Well, that's an interesting point. And speaking of RuPaul, well, first of all, on that point, I don't think it's going to be bode well for her career, because as much as Hollywood actors like to virtue signal and Hollywood likes to pretend that they are super woke, they still want the hot leading man. They still want the heterosexual love story. The normal, you know, the normal things is still what sells. I don't think her prospect for roles looks very good. Still, when men come out as gay in Hollywood, and Hollywood is filled with closeted gay men, they don't get those leading roles anymore. So that could be good. But speaking of RuPaul, and if you really want to be flipped on your head, of course, you know, RuPaul has this reality show called RuPaul's Drag Race. Which is a competition between drag queens. Drag queens are gay men who dress as women it's nightlife entertainment, right? It's performance, it's,
sure.
You know. So they
like
just
Barbara
announced
Streisand,
that this next
right.
season, right, exactly, yeah. Adult nightlife entertainment. It's been around forever. People love drag. But they just announced on their next season they were going to have their first trans man competitor, which is a biological woman who identifies as a man who dresses up as a woman to entertain.
That's not fair.
There you go. I don't think that's fair.
That's
either.
Called They're cheating.
Right?
I think Elliot Page could be cast in a Rosie O'Donnell biopic.
Oh.
You know, I think
she LBs, or they well, can make her.
Well, sure. Yeah, she wear a fat suit, but I think she could pull that off. He could pull that off, I should say. Excuse me. I mean, what it speaks to, even though this is, as you say, sort of arrested adolescent silliness, it does speak to the continued push for identitarian politics. If anybody thought identitarianism was going to go away when the left was able to depose Donald Trump, they're just going to press down on the pedal. We see this not just in the area of gender identity politics, but Ivy League librarians. I mean, is there a more removed set of people in the world than Ivy League librarians? How thick and small is that bubble? 13 abolitionist librarians, they're calling themselves. Abolitionists, like, you know, like slavery abolitionists. 13 abolitionist librarians from the Ivy League call themselves Abla Ivy, demanding colleges immediately begin the work of divesting from police and prisons. The librarians are leading, the Ivy League librarians are leading the fight. But I mean, so there's this defund the police. It costs Democrats seats in the House and probably seats in the Senate and probably the presidency, although that may not go as we anticipate it. But that identitarian politics, this is not going away. This is only going to increase in speed and intensity.
I think you're right. And I think what guaranteed that was the fact that it's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris that none of the far lefties wanted. Nobody wanted them to be president. Let's be honest. People only voted for him because they strongly disliked the other guy. Nobody eagerly voted for Biden. But, you know, the far left, they didn't. Once again, like in 2016, they had their candidate stolen from them. So they don't like Biden. They despise him. He's an old white man. And, you know, they they might not be vocal about it because they don't want to hurt their own, the side that they're most aligned with, but they pretty much feel about him the same way that a lot of the Trumpers do. He's a swamp creature, he's whatever. But so that even gives them more, they're still angry, and that even gives them more carte blanche to double down on the social justice insanity, the identity politics insanity. I believe I saw Black Lives Matter posting about how it had been 35 days since they requested a meeting with Kamala and Biden, and they hadn't got it yet. Yeah, well, no duh. What were you expecting?
Well, they were expecting. But, they wanted a seat at the table to express their frustrations, right, and let them know we helped you. We put you in office. Now you got to repay us.
I think it's for those who fear the far left, it's scarier that Biden was anointed and as president because, you know, in the next election, the far left might actually get their guy. They might get their grassroots populist guy like Trump was for the right. And that might be scary. But for now, they've got 4 years. If Biden ends up being president, they've got 4 years to find that person and to increase the insanity and double down on this behavior.
But you read past the subtext, though. They demand a meeting. They're not getting a meeting. You're not supposed to come in the front door. You come in the back door when I tell you to come. It doesn't mean that there's any they're not disassociating from one another. It's just we have you in this space to play this role. You can't embarrass me in front of my friends.
That's exactly right. It reminds me of something I heard Ambassador Rick Grenell say when he was the first openly gay member of the presidential cabinet. And he had said, you know, the Democrats treat us, they like to put us at, when talking about LGBTs, another identity group, he said they like to put us at the rainbow table down the hall, and they come in, you know, once a year, and they check in on us, and they snap our picture, and then that's it. Whereas someone like Trump, he said put us at the cabinet table, or put us, he wants the best person for the job. So you're right, it's like come in the back door, we don't want to, look too cozy, we don't want to. Yes, you helped us get elected, and we used you, but, that's all over now. Now we're in charge.
He is Chadwick Moore. He's a columnist for The Spectator. Check out his latest offering, Hey, Eleniat. Aren't you a bit too old for this, as we were discussing? Chadwick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
I want Christmas. Just give me plain baby Jesus lying in a manger. Christmas.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Coming up at 8:38 is our Open Mic Friday, so you want to grab a line for that. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. But before we do, you know, we make fun of Republicans, too, because so many of them deserve it. And nobody does it better than Remy, Remy of Reason Magazine and his parody songs. Well, he's got you've heard them before. Like, I mean, this is a classic one, just to give you a little bit of Remy for context. The people are going to die mantra of politicians. This is even really pre the height of COVID. So COVID is just allowing them to do what they've always done, as Remy sings.
These cuts are blood money. People will die. Let's be very clear. Senate Republicans are paying for tax cuts for the wealthy with American lives.
People need kidneys. It's sad but decreed. Yet the senator's hoarding one more than she needs. I offer this bill and I hope you'll vote aye. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Traffic deaths have many crying with fear. Over 30,000 people are dying each year. This modest change I propose must be applied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die. Alcohol deaths are exceeding comparisons. Black people, white people, Native Americans. We need to ban alcohol. It can't be denied. Unless, of course, you just want people to die.
Yeah, you get it. That's a good one. It's a great one. And think about now adding COVID. He could do a whole people die on COVID alone, of course. But he's anticipating a Biden administration and how Republicans on the Hill may change their tune when it comes to debt and deficits now that their big spender has been replaced by the Democrats' big spender. I mean, let's just be honest about it.
Joe Biden will be the 46th president of these United States.
I left that tea party quicker than a poisoned Russian opposition leader. When my party took back the White House and I became a cheerleader.
great rain.
Looks like a guy who's found himself addicted to Uber Eats. Well, it seems we're giving too much money to the Chinese. Isn't that the same spending contained in bills that you recently penned? The ideological difference is I'm about to start caring again. You'll hear me wail, you'll hear me scoff, you'll see me faint, you'll hear me talk about how the spending's needing to go. Why for the past 4 years I didn't care, our fiscal policy looked like a Mr. Beast video. Cause when the president gets rich, those politicians get the itch to just defend our team's will and soul. I'm about to start caring, about to start swearing, it's not a red herring, our debt needs repairing. I'm hereby declaring I'm about to start caring again.
Yeah, Remy, and he's right on the mark with the hypocrisy of both parties when it comes to spending. We've seen it play out over the last several administrations, including the Trump administration. So let's be honest about it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now!
Yes, Dan and Amy, it is time for Open Mic Friday. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Your compliments, comments, concerns, conspiracy theories, crack pottery in general, we will take it all.
Anything you want to get off your chest?
I'll wait my turn.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to defer my time to some of our callers. Let's get right into it. Bob in Buffalo Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thanks for taking my call, Amy and Dan. Missed getting through to you last week. Let me offer the following. Each Sunday, I punish myself watching Meet the Press, and this week with Georgie Stephanopoulos. It's going to be interesting this week if they address the Hunter issue, Biden Inc., and the Swalwell story. I just wonder how Chuck E. Toad and Stephanopoulos are going to spin this. Let's forget about the Russian collusion story for the last 4 years. The real collusion to me has been the bias and the collusion of the media, not for 4 years, but for the last 12 years. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call,
Bob.
You
talk about collusion of the media. What in God's name is ABC News' Jonathan Carl on last night on MSNBC with Brian Williams? He was one of the panelists talking about how Trump is, you know, not going to concede and what's going to happen the next 42 days, and we have to be careful and we have to watch him. It's like they're working together, and that was just a graphic reminder that they really are working together.
Oh, they're still clinging to the it's going to take the military to remove him nonsense. Yeah. Tim and DeKalb, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, we need to bring in fanatics is the word no. I'm going to become a notionalist for the rest of my life, a democratic notionalist. But we need to usher in notionalism on some of this insanity. If you think you're not a female, if you think you're not a male, if you think whatever, we just need to tell people no. The librarians want to do this and that. No. There's 75,000 of us and there's 16 of you. The answer is no. That's called democracy. Have a nice day.
Thanks for the call, Tim. Yes, well, the reason that you have seen so much advancement by those intolerant, illiberal forces of the left is exactly what Tim is referencing by implication, which is appeasement. You know, the appeasement is provocative, whether it's the appeasement of some leftist mayor, big city mayor, or it's appeasement of conservatives on a college campus or in whose kids are in a K-12 school system where the same dynamic is afoot. Yeah. You appease aggression, you get more of it. Rich and Niles.
Hello?
Hello, Rich.
Oh, yeah. The reason I'm calling is it was never clear to me whether the machines that we voted on, those Dominion machines, were they compromised or weren't they compromised? It seemed to me that Jim Oberweis lost. he was ahead in the early evening, and the next morning he lost the election. And then we wound up with this Fox woman, which I can't believe anybody in their right mind would vote for her. So were they? Did anybody investigate those machines? Did Illinois do something about them?
There's no evidence of that, Rich. And by the way, on Kim Fox, what you're in disbelief of is just the number of people who are out of their minds who live in Cook County, because that was not a close race. And there really have been no allegations by the Oberweis campaign that I'm aware of with respect to the machinery. I know there was the talk of them pursuing a formal recount, but I don't know that any claim of that sort was made. Grant in Rockford.
Good morning, you two. Happy Friday. So since it's blatantly obvious that we don't have a DOJ anymore, they can't get Ilhan Omar for admitting to campaign fraud on video, but we can grab Steve Bannon and drag him off of a ship. I'm no Steve Bannon guy, but it's just crazy that Trump's own DOJ can't get anything done. I just want to know, how do you think Trump proceeds? Because they're obviously going to steal the election. I say he holds rallies the next 4 years. The Republican voters aren't going to vote for somebody else, some other swamp creature. The African Americans aren't going to come out and vote for some other swamp creature. I mean, short of Trump 2024, I don't see the Republicans ever recovering.
Ever's a long time, Grant. Thanks for the call. Yeah. But I think you're right. I mean, there's nobody who brings a constituency to the table that comes anywhere near what Trump retains.
Well, no one can draw the crowds like he can. And he could campaign with, what, you said Kevin McCarthy, right, to fill the House?
That's what I suspect he'll do. I mean, I think he needs to continue to press the issue in Georgia to help turn out Trump supporters in Georgia for those two Republican candidates, help both Perdue and Loeffler get across the finish line, and then turn his attention to the House and help Kevin McCarthy retire Nancy Pelosi. Wouldn't that be a fitting way for her to go, for Trump to come right back after what has transpired this election cycle and end her political career in the next election cycle with an eye towards 24, whether he wants to be in the position of supporting somebody else to run, to carry effectively his banner, or he wants to do it himself. I mean, that's something that is, an imponderable at this point. I mean, maybe not to him. I don't know exactly what his thinking is, of course, but it is an imponderable at this point. 4 years is a long time. But in terms of what he does in the immediacy, it seems that he picks up people who are going to advance his assault on those swamp creatures that were referenced. Then he continues to add equity to his brand and set up either himself or somebody who would follow suit. That would be my thinking. That would be my conversation if I had it with him.
Do you think he'll show up to the inauguration?
He
should.
Whatever.
Yeah. And don't wear a mask because he's already had COVID. Help us.
James in Westmont, you wanted to weigh in on our proposed diaper mandate, and I don't mean face diapers.
Yeah, good morning, you two. Yeah, I think the governor, the perfect diaper for him is what sumos wear. They're called a rikishi.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually made out of silk. He has the money to afford them. Mm-hmm. And the champion sumo wrestlers, they have like their own fan club, each one. And their fan club pays for these, which run anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000.
What?
So what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That's a lot of fabric, but I didn't know it was that expensive.
Well, first of all.
Oh, yes. It's all silk.
First of all, James and Westmont,
I use a cotton polyester bond.
Our resident expert in sumo wrestling, how did you become so knowledgeable about this sport?
Well, my father, when he was in the Air Force, he was in Okinawa and spent some time in Japan, and he became a fan of sumo wrestling. And if you remember ABC Wide World of Sports years ago, once in a blue moon, they would show sumo wrestling, championship sumo wrestling. And every time my dad watched it, and I would watch it with him. My dad was always a fan of contact sports, whether it be boxing, sumo wrestling, football, and before he died, he became a big fan of MMA. So,
interesting. I do remember sumo on Wide World of Sports. I do remember that.
Yes.
You're right. That is sort of wild.
Wide World. Jim Kay's voice. Remember?
Okay. All right, James. It's an idea in terms of the specific diaper for JB Pritzker. Although
he knows a lot about it too.
The only thing is. It's fine if that's what he wants to wear, generally speaking. But as somebody, when he unveils the diaper, you want it to be something that's accessible to the masses, right? So it's got to be at a price point that everybody can afford.
Right.
Or maybe, it's just part of what's provided for by the government. Is just everybody gets the Pritzker style diaper to wear.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, like Amy said, a cotton poly blend would
be
better.
Yeah, cotton polyester blend is what we could do. We'd save on costs.
For us commoners, but, you know, for the royalty like him.
You get the silk.
You get silk.
The silk, right.
Yeah, all right.
Fine.
That's good. That's good thinking on the diaper thing. And we're going to make you part of our Blue Ribbon Commission, James. I appreciate that.
It'll look great on your resume, too. To get the girls.
Jim and McHenry.
Hey, guys. How are love you. Love your show. Amy, the other day you were saying that Pritzker won't read your data on COVID when you give it to him. I was thinking of, I got a way to make him read it. Just tell him you're going to hide a piece of bologna in between the pages, and he's going to read it to find it.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Jim. Harvey and Aurora.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, where's the ACLU here with our lockdowns? What's the brief abbreviation stand for?
It used to stand for that, right. Yes.
Why are they not engaged in getting our rights back or whatever?
Yeah. Well, it's a rhetorical question. I think, you know, it's like the NAACP is interested in the advancement of Black Americans. No, they're interested in the advancement of leftism. The ACLU is interested in your civil liberties. No, they're interested in the advance of leftism. And when something like somebody's civil liberties leftism runs into somebody's civil liberties and needs to, you know, roll over them, then the ACLU is right there to be silent and watch those civil liberties be rolled over. And that's what's happening during COVID, of course. Just as the NAACP doesn't exactly go to bat for Thomas Sowell or Clarence Thomas or Bob Woodson or Shelby Steele or Glenn Lowry. It could go on and on and on. What is that? What do those Black gentlemen have in common that would fail to gain the interest of the NAACP? Golly, I can't figure it out. Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Good morning, guys. Now is the time for Republicans like Overweiss or, you know, some other of those people to get people organized to start going after Madigan. That has to start now. Sitting here and complaining about, the media is against us and all this type of stuff. Somebody has to, there has to be like a localized Tea Party movement to go after to get things to change in Illinois. And I think it can happen.
Or we move to Austin. Effort. One of the two.
Take us with you.
Well, move to Austin. Well, that's why I moved to Austin.
See, there you go. I am me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kevin.
It's either that. I've got a lot of family that's still there, and it's sad to hear it all.
No, I know. I know.
It's depressing.
I appreciate it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But, yeah, no, I mean, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who's moving from the North Shore to Georgia just last night. It's like, I used to travel all over the world. Chicago is the greatest big city in the world. I love Chicago. I love most of my time in Illinois, but you cannot make it make sense to be here. Everything is a hassle, which is my line. It is just the stupidity is oppressive and unrelenting.
It's a daily infringement on our civil rights. We can't go to church. Our kids can't go to school.
And
we can't do yoga. We can't work out at the gym. It's so stupid.
And people have options. And also people in Illinois have options, too, even if they're staying. And they've chosen to fall in with the political ruling class. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about whatever constitutes the Republican Party. I'm talking about people who've thrown up their hands. You know, that's a choice that people have made to say, no, I'm going to go along with kleptocratic Republicans. Time and again, when there's been an opportunity to make a break, Illinois Republicans have failed. Illinois Democrats, you expect them to do what they did, which is take advantage of Illinois Republicans' failures, and that's what they've done to consolidate their power. So Illinois residents have agency too. They've made choices time and time again, including conservatives, including Republicans in Illinois, have made choices time and time again over the last several cycles. Terrible choices. And now, you know, you're continuing to pay the freight for the choices that you made. We've made. Dan on the north side.
Hello. Regarding the Hunter Biden investigation, the biggest person to fear on the Biden team is Kamala Harris. She will backstab him to become president.
Yeah, perhaps. Thanks for the call, Dan. I don't know that she's good enough to get away with it. I mean, remember, these are Obama-Biden loyalists that have been brought to the table. I mean, will they ultimately dump Biden if he becomes too much of a burden to try to usher in Kamala? As Joe Biden said, if there's a disagreement, will I pretend I've got an illness and resign? Maybe.
I mean, that was ludicrous, but it's probably the truth.
Will and Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? You were talking about transism earlier. I have a daughter/son who's trans and insists that I call her that, and if I don't, she don't then let me see my granddaughter and all this other stuff. The thing that we're living through now is that people have their delusions, and rather than saying, okay, you need help, or okay, we'll just, you know, go along with you jokingly, the people who have the delusions demand that we buy into their delusions, and the news media and the news media culture pushes it, and now the politicians are pushing it, that we all have to go along with other people's delusions. And I just think it's an interesting, sad times indication. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Will. What it becomes is a full $300 million, which is a mass delusion. That's right. Brett in Barrington.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for having me on. Love the show. We have a large group of concerned parents up here in Barrington that don't have the ability to send our kids into school for any type of hybrid learning, while many of the surrounding school districts do have kids in school and have had them in there for months. Everything's working fine. No one's spreading COVID around. And we have a petition going around. I just tweeted it at you guys the last couple of days, tweet again this morning, and love if you guys could retweet this out. But we are trying to get a large movement here to put some pressure on the superintendent, Brian Harris, who has been friends with Jelly Belly Pritzker all their lives, and he's retiring this next summer. And the feeling is, and some talks have been, that he is just trying to coast through and appease the teachers union and not ruffle any feathers, and just trying to cruise to his retirement and then take a job with Pritzker, you know, to get a political career. So he's really working for himself and not for our kids and our community. They sent out a survey before the school year even started this last summer, asking parents if they would opt in for sending their kids into school or opt out. And over 70% of the parents at that time said that they would send their kids to school. Mm-hmm. So they know what the voice of the community is. They're just not listening to it. They're not listening or looking at the right metrics, and they're finding ways to not send the kids to school as opposed to sending them to school.
Isn't it amazing, Brett, though, that 70%, 80%, 90% is a minority with respect to school district decisions?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so the bottom line, they don't care what parents think.
Well, right, and why don't they? And why don't they?
Because they don't want to go back to work.
No. Why don't they care what parents think, Brett? Because there's no consequence for them not caring what parents think. That's why.
Right. So that's why we're trying to put this pressure on him and, you know, tarnish his 30-year, you know, legacy and career and put the pressure on him because he's really just, you know, in it for himself and not for the majority of our students. So we're having a big rally next Tuesday before a school board meeting. The school board meeting is next Tuesday to discuss all this and supposedly come up with a plan to get the kids back in school after the Christmas break, but they're just giving us a bunch of lip service, and they actually changed the school district. It's 3:00 next Tuesday the 15th.
Where?
In downtown Barrington.
Okay.
Downtown Barrington, the corner of 59 and Lake Cook.
Great.
All right, well,
trying to get as many people as possible.
And I want to tell you too about a big rally to reopen.
Thanks, Brett. We'll look for that tweet and retweet it. Thanks,
yeah,
Brett.
And then a rally to reopen this Sunday, December 13th, 2:30 p.m. at outside District 204. That's at 780 Shoreline Drive in Aurora. Please, if you live out that way, if your kids go to District 204, Saturday, December 13th, 2:30 p.m., be there.
Dawn in Plainfield.
Hi, good morning. Good for that guy. He's awesome.
Anyway, Amy, you know how Dan's always bragging about his bragging. 80s music knowledge? Oh, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
He's true. Always like, oh, he's very try
humble.
Me, Amy.
That's
try
true.
Me.
That's
humble,
true.
Humble, okay. Dan, humble prof. Yes, what about
it? Yeah. So early in the week, you brought up Jenny McCarthy and her boyfriend, Donnie Wahlberg. And you said he was from the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
No.
Donnie Wahlberg, Backstreet Boys.
She's not married to Donnie. She's married to another Wahlberg.
No, who's the Wahlberg? Is Donnie or Mark? No, it's Donnie. She's married to Donnie. He was a Backstreet Boy.
He was from New Kids on the Block.
Oh, New Kids on the Block. Oh, New Kids on the Block.
Get your boys band back.
Oh, yeah, New Kids on the Block.
Oh, thank you so much for calling.
Oh, my God, you're right. You're right. You're right.
On a serious note, though, so that being said, I would like to know, since we're talking 80s music, are you or Chuck from Delvin going to be entering the Olympics since breakdancing is now an official sport?
I don't know if I've still got
the you've got the chops.
Well, that helicopter spin that I used to have. Thanks
get
for
you
the
in
call,
training,
Don.
Dan. It's like riding a bike. You can get back on there. Get back on that cardboard and spin, man. Come on.
I mean, I used to know the whole routine to Hanging Tough, and I've new kids. And
oh, is there a video of that? Can I please have it? You had a mullet, too, and parachute pants? Oh, please.
I guess I'm just, you know, it's how old I'm getting, whereas you think of original boy band Backstreet Boys. You don't go all the way to New Kids. I'm embarrassed.
You just got smoked.
I got served.
You did.
What happened. What happened there? Chuck and Delavan, speak of the devil.
Hi, Chuck.
Oh, you grabbed the wrong line. It's Santa Claus. Thank you for sending me all your listeners. Over half the people at the bottle shop last Friday night starts at 5:30. It's free. We're the listeners from WIND. And we had a couple horror stories, a couple of the children. That one girl gave her Elf on the Shelf away. She woke up, and all her underpants was hanging on the Christmas tree, so she got rid of her Elf on the Shelf.
And then, all right, Chuck.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.